Hey everybody, it's Jake and I am alone in the basement. Tonight, we're going to be talking to Rip Bison. I am so fucking pumped for this. I have to swear within the first, 10 fucking seconds to let you know. This is a dude who, from the moment I saw him, I was hooked. And I had to go find a bunch of different stuff of his. And I'm really excited for this. So, you know the deal by now. Sit through the ad. And then on the way back, we're going to be talking to Rip Bison. All right, everybody, we are back and we are with Rip Bison, who just told me off air this is his first podcast, which still blows my fucking mind. So thank you so much for doing this, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, man. Okay, so get this right off the bat. Fuck is okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I swear constantly.
All right, awesome. Great. Yeah, no, I'm not going to watch what I'm saying then.
Oh, fuck. No, there's no need to.
Okay. Lovely.
So I'm just going to start it with the generic routine bullshit question you've probably been asked by a million people in your life. How did you start watching wrestling? But was there like any moments or matches when you saw it, you were like, all right, I'm hooked. I'm going to be a fan for life.
Yeah, actually, I remember not watching it. It was like, oh man, I was like 4 or 5 at the time, and my parents would always they would have it on, so I'd only catch like the beginning promos or like the first match of Raw or something or SmackDown, and it happened to be a SmackDown, and it was the SmackDown where Triple H came out with the phony Mankind, and he was cutting that promo on him, and the fake Mankind is he's like groveling at his feet in the thing, and then all of a sudden Mick Foley comes out and he cuts that great promo about how Mankind isn't ready to face Triple H at the Royal Rumble in a street fight and stuff, but then he's like, I got a replacement, and he pulls off the mask and the shirt and it's Cactus Jack, and the place goes bananas and he goes House of Fire and shit and bumping and beating and punching and kicking, and he looked great, and and his final line that stuck in my head ever since then is, my first order of business in the WWF is to kick your teeth all over Chicago. And I was a little kid. I'm like, I like this guy, man. And I was hooked from then on. I couldn't ever watch it like live because, like I said, I was 4 or 5, but I wanted to see it. So my parents started, you remember, taping things with the VHS over movies you had and stuff like that. Yeah, that's how I watched wrestling in the beginning, because of that.
And so now I just found out that I'm much older than you, which is a thing. And yeah, that feud in 2000 was the one that sold me on Triple H. I was like, okay, I get it now. Because him and Mick just beating the fuck out of each other. I don't know what it was about it, but that was it. Any hesitations I had on Trips was gone after that.
I always like Triple H. A lot of people like shit on him and say he went in for his business for himself. That dude made people look really good. Yeah, he always went over in the end as the heel and stuff, and I get being upset about that, but he made them look good, except for like Scott Steiner. That wasn't a very good one.
I don't think there was any way to make that work, though.
Oh, no, there was a way. It was called Let Scott Steiner Come Down with the Tiger. And, that's Scott Steiner. We needed that one against Triple H. It seemed like they toned him down. But, hey, whatever. I don't book. I just try to live this crazy thing, you know, man?
Oh, yeah. I totally know. And, I mean, I get it also in the same thing all the times where you hear people like, oh, he was burying people. At that time in the business, isn't that what you were supposed to be doing? You only have so long on top. And I think that's reasons why guys like Hogan and Flair politicked the way they did. And now we hear conflicting stories all the time of people coming out and saying, oh, no, they were really easy to work with and they were willing to do tons of stuff for me. So we always don't necessarily know what they were doing or just what management at the time wanted.
There's always people who hate somebody and there's always people who like somebody. You know, that's how it is. That's outside of wrestling. That's in wrestling. That's in any aspect of life.
Yeah,
that's what it is, man.
That's nail on the head.
You're always going to meet them haters, and fuck them.
That's nail on the head, man. There's no way of avoiding it. There's people who are going to be against you no matter what, so.
Yeah, sir. I can 100% agree with that.
Now, so you grew up mostly on WWE. How long did it take you to find other things?
Well, fun fact. When I started training in 2012, I had no idea that there was an independent scene. I knew WCW, I knew WWE. Obviously, WCW was long gone, but I knew that they reigned supreme, and I knew that there's Japan. And but I had no idea how vast and how big the independent scene was, even back then, where it wasn't as what I don't think it was as good as it is now. It may have had stronger people, but you know, I mean, every state has 100 promotions in it, and I had no clue. I never looked around for it. That's when I discovered that there's other things, and that's when my eyes opened to wrestling in general, was because of that. I mean, I stopped watching just one thing. It's crazy.
And that is nuts, because, like, you'd ever heard of, like, Ring of Honor or anything? What about Impact?
No, I knew about TNA. I knew about Total Nonstop Action, because that's where all the guys would leave WWE. And I'm like, why are they leaving WWE? Go over there. And I never watched them. And I was a big proponent, even through, like, the Alliance and the Invasion angle and stuff. I was like, WWE all the way. WWE, that's it. That's the best thing in the world, you know? I bought into the bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to put it.
I was 100% biggest WWF mark ever, man. I was the kid at school with all the figures, and I had a friend who watched Raw. I'd watch SmackDown, and we'd compare notes, man. That was my freaking life before I started training in wrestling, and I found out that you weren't just waiting at the school for a scout to come in and see how good you were for WWE. You were actually – there was places you could work, you know?
And if I remember right, because I remember listening to Davey's episode of the Year One podcast, you were at the New England Pro Wrestling Academy when you started. Was it still the Chaotic School then, or was it the New England Pro Wrestling Academy?
No, Fury owned the thing, and it was New England Pro Wrestling Academy. What you call it? Yeah, so, but I mean, like, they still... Chaotic still has a big influence in there, and they that's where you first started off. Even my first independent show was Chaotic Wrestling. I set up the ring for him because Fury was going to beat my ass if I didn't show up and do ring crew.
I love how you said that you didn't really know the indies beforehand, because I remember being a kid, and my mom lived here in New York, and my dad lived in Massachusetts. So I was always going back and forth between. And I remember, like, begging him to take me to indie shows throughout Mass, and Chaotic being one of them. And he never took me to those ones, but there was a few he did. So it's crazy that you didn't know, but I did. And you lived there.
Well, I guess I knew about, like, the fair shows, you know, the big wrestling, and or the Tony Atlas showing up at a fair and stuff like that. And I saw that once in a while. I'd see the ring either going up or coming down. I'd miss the show because I wasn't there. I didn't go out of my way to search for it.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah, so I was a little sheltered baby about this whole thing. And now here we are.
Yeah, look at it. 8 years later, what crazy shit it turned into. So
yeah, right.
What made you decide that you were going to be a pro wrestler?
After I fell in love with that promo from Cactus, and then I started watching wrestling, and my favorite wrestler was Kane back then, and I wanted to be Kane so bad. He had the cool mask, he had the fire, the choke slam and stuff, and I wanted to, and like every day I tell my mom that I'm going to grow up to be 7'5" or whatever they built him at then, and I'm going to be Kane. And she was always like, oh, that's great, you know, here, I had every Kane figure that ever came out and stuff, and that's what I wanted to be, man. He was a superhero to me.
Yeah, and I've gone to bat for Kane multiple times on this show. That dude does not get enough credit for the shit he put in, for the amount of years he put in.
Yeah, that guy hustled, man. He was given some the short end of the stick a couple of times. I mean, fake Diesel, that could only go one way. And, like, Dr. Isaac Yankum and stuff. So, yeah, when I found out that Kane was my Batman, you know? I didn't really care for Stone Cold. I was too young to understand why he was so mad at his boss. He always kind of came off as a prick to me. I didn't like The Rock. Undertaker was not wrestling at that time because he was going on his hiatus. He was about to come back as American Badass, in which I love American Badass. Side note, I will defend American Badass Undertaker till the end of time. So fucking good.
I'm on that, yeah, so. That short list too. Who, I mean, while I get the dead man and, you know, I appreciated it, I feel like at this point, I feel like he's done it too long and that American Badass was more of his genuine personality. And I almost feel like you can kind of connect easier with that than the dead man.
Also, he was just cool, man. Riding a motorcycle down the ramp to the ring. Oh, that was bad. He wore the trench coat, the sunglasses, the bandana. Man, back then, all the angsty little kidness in me. I mean, I wasn't quite a teenager, but... I was all angsty and mad. I'm like, I want to be bad. That's cool. And then he ended up, him and Kane ended up becoming friends again. And they teamed up, and I was so happy. You know, I was like, wow, this badass dude is with my favorite wrestler. So, yeah, I love American Badass Undertaker. But, yeah, I wanted to be Kane. He was my superhero.
That's
a lot of kids like Spider-Man. A lot of kids like Batman. I like Kane. Kane was better than all of them too. He could shoot fire.
I'm sure he was in a comic at some point too.
He was. Did you ever read the Undertaker comics they came out with?
I remember I had a few of them as a kid. I don't know what happened to them.
Those, I remember that's why sold me on following him. But he didn't talk much. All he did was grr.
I remember.
Yeah, but.
I still remember Bad Blood, you know, in 97 when he showed up for the first time, being legitimately scared shitless when he tore the fucking door off the cell. And I'm like, to my parents, like, who the fuck is this? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, how do you not know? He's about to kill somebody. He's ripping fucking doors off cages.
Yeah, right. Oh. I didn't even get to see that. I was seeing emotionally distressed Kane in late 99, early 2000. That was the Kane I was having. They had the angle where he was with Tori at the time, and she had cheated on him with X-Pac, and I hated X-Pac, ruining my superhero's fucking friendship, you know? And I'm like, ah, oh, what the hell?
Oh, man, the late Attitude Era angles that they ran with.
I loved it. I loved every second of it. Now I look back at it and I go, God, that's awful. But as a kid, I fucking loved it. I thought it was so cool.
I agree. It was weird for me because at that was kind of the point where for me, I was starting to kind of get over the Attitude Era angles because I was kind of just like, man, this shit is not that great. And I miss watching wrestling and I feel like there's less wrestling now. And I almost fell out, but I found the internet and the ability to buy tapes from Japan, and that's what saved my fandom in, like, late 2001, early 2000. Yeah, that was it. That was the moment for me. I was like, whoa, look at this shit.
Yeah, right?
So how old were you when you went to Fury School?
I had just graduated. I had just graduated high school in 2012. And so I was I 17 or was I 18 yet? How old was I supposed to be to buy cigarettes? Oh, man.
18.
Yeah, so I was 18 at the time, and I was able to sign the permission slip myself. So I basically told my parents that, hey, I know that you guys probably want me to go to college, but I want to try this for a summer. And so I did that for my summer. And as an 18-year-old, I signed the paper, the consent form and stuff, so I can't sue them and everything. And I fell in love with it, and I forgot about my college. What is that when you go to the classes before school, actually? So orientation.
Yeah.
I forgot about my class orientation. I got a text from a chick who was in my school, and she's like, oh, I saw you were in the class. Why weren't you at orientation? I'm like, oh, I completely forgot. I'm not going to college anymore. I'm using my money that, for college, I'm going to spend it on wrestling. And then I got the email from the college that I was signed up and supposed to be at. And they said, oh, you missed orientation. You want to make up the time this week? And I sent a one-line email to them that said, I'm not going to your school this year. Thank you. Goodbye. And that was how I terminated my chance of scholastic prowess.
That's great. That's a great. And, you know, I always heard that, too, because at that age, that was the first thing I wanted to do was just go to wrestling school. And instead, I got the shit from my parents of, no, go to school, get your degree, and, you know, you can do it in the meantime, but don't forget your school. And
yeah, my parents at that point, they thought it was just going to be a phase thing. So they said, you know what, you're young. Now is the time to do it. You can always go back to school and stuff. That's one thing they always said to me. They said, we would like you to go to school, but you can always go back. You might not ever be able to do wrestling again. So fuck it. Go try it, you know?
Yeah. And that's the way I'm going to put it to my kids. Like, if you have a dream and you want to chase it, go for it. Put everything you fucking have into it and just go balls out on it. Cause schools are always going to be there. Schools aren't going to close, but if you don't go and chase your dreams, then you're going to wind up like a lot of people my age with the what ifs. And I don't want them to have what ifs.
No, yeah, that's I'm looking at my friends now who all went straight to college to have that college fucking experience. They're all miserable with their lives. And I'm out here every weekend. All of a sudden they call me up. Hey, you want to get together, get some drinks? And I'm like, dude, I'm in New Orleans right now. What the fuck?
You know? I'm not going to make it.
I'm in fucking San Antonio, Texas. I'm hanging out by the Alamo. I can't fucking go out to drinks right now. I'm sorry, dude. I'll get you when I come back and stuff like that. And that is the cool. I have right now, they may have had the degree on the wall, but if I really wanted to, I could write a book. And then I can hang that on my wall if I want a piece of paper on the wall, you know?
Exactly. I can only imagine the shit, too, that you've seen.
Oh, good God, I have some horrible stories.
Now, when you were at the New England Pro Wrestling Academy, who were some of the people that were there the same time as you? Because I know there's some names.
You mean training with me or just in general?
I mean, you can do both, because, I mean, the trainers, too, were probably nuts.
Well, obviously Fury was there. My other trainers would have been at the time would be Scotty Vegas. Not Scotty Vegas. Wow, holy crap. Johnny Vegas. Scotty Vegas I wrestled on shows with as that's Alexander Lee. Anyways, Johnny Vegas helped train me. And then Warbeard had just come back from his injury, his broken back, and he was coming back, and Fury was doing like Tuesday classes, and Hanson was training the Thursday classes, and then Fury would do the Saturday classes. So those were two of my trainers, and then obviously the Chaotic that would come in and which will help out whenever they damn well please and stuff. And then for trainees, I was really who's left in the business or who actually debuted. Cam Zagami. I don't know if – yeah, you know Cam, right?
Oh, I know Cam.
Okay, yeah, so Cam Zagami was, he had just started, he was a couple months in when I started. Mikey Webb was a veteran student there. And then it was, and a bunch of other kids that they kind of fell off the face of the earth. But anyways, a bunch of those kids were there. And then I, like 2 weeks after I started, Dave Yen joined. And then for like, oh, it had to have been like 2 months or so before we got another new student. So me and Davey were the Greenhorn training partners for a while, just us two. I mean, the other kids would get mixed in with us, but out of the two that, like, especially that you've interviewed, yeah, me and Davey were training partners for the whole tenor there, I guess.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Davey's been on before. I fucking love her. She's great and she's hilarious.
Oh, she's a bitch. I love her, but she's a bitch. Here's a funny side story about Davey. I dragged her up to Canada on a show because they wanted girl wrestlers, and I needed someone to wrestle Delmi. So I got Davey booked on the show. And so she came up, and we on our way back through at the border, they stopped, and they asked some questions while we're up there. And we said, one thing I've learned is that you don't lie. Just fucking, if you lie about it, you're going to be pulled in. They're going to get your stories all mixed up and everything. So I just tell them we're wrestlers. And he goes, really your wrestlers? And at the time I was Tomahawk, the Native American warrior, baby. And, and so I was like, well, I'm an Indian warrior. And, Delmi at the time was kind of doing, this alien gimmick, or she was on her way out of the alien gimmick. And, so she said that, and then he turned to Davey and he goes, well, who are you? And she goes, oh, I'm just a bitch. So every time somebody brings up Davey, I gotta say, well, she's a fucking bitch.
And, oh, character-wise, she totally is. And I can only imagine some instances.
That's because she trained with guys, man. That's because she was the only girl at New England Pro Wrestling Academy for the longest time, and she just got beat up. You know, like, we were rough on her. Not mean or malicious, we're just beating her up, and she got tough, and... What's your call? Yeah, I can't. She wrestles like any other dude I've ever wrestled. It's great.
Yeah, she's definitely a fucking bruiser on the women's side. And that's why I love watching her women's matches. But I also love the intergender matches where she's just fucking... It looks like she's just stiffing the fuck out of dudes. And I find that amusing.
She's stiff as hell. don't let her fool you. She'll knock your teeth out. Oh my gosh, we were learning forearms and nobody wanted to get in the ring with Davey. Would practice for us because she just fucking haul off, man. It's like, and we're in the middle of class, we're like, it's a fucking work. You know? I was like, Jesus. And I wasn't super into the Japanese style wrestling yet. Now, if she wants to haul off on me, fuck yeah, let's do it. Drop me on my head. But, you know, back then when I was a green kid, I'm like, oh, she's going to not break my nose.
She was throwing elbows like she was fucking Baby Misawa.
Oh yeah, her friend. Oh yeah. Oh, the stone forearm, fucking Davey N. We should call her because holy fuck. And she says every time, no, no one ever said that. Yeah, I can. Granted, half those kids quit, but which I vouch for at least five people who agree with me on that part.
I'm now going to start.
At one point, Dijak was one of them that agreed with us that she fucking hauled off on us.
I'm going to start a rumor now that most of those kids quit because Davey punched them in the fucking face.
Oh, man. You know what? If they listen to this podcast, they'll be pissed at me. Maybe I'll hear from them after all these years. But, you know, yeah, sure, go ahead. I don't know if anyone's going to hear it. So that's good.
Now, you just mentioned the Tomahawk gimmick where I had only known you as Rip Bison when I first saw your match from Limitless with Warhorse. So it's kind of like, okay, where do I find stuff of him? And I wasn't finding a lot. And it was on the podcast she was on before she was on mine. She said, oh, Tomahawk, now he's Rip Bison. And I'm like, okay, there's a name I can search now. Fuck, finally. Okay, there's a lead here. Where did the idea for Tomahawk come from? And... Are you native at all?
Oh, I have native in me. I'm a part of Blackfoot Indian. So, yeah, oh, I would never have done it if I wasn't Indian.
Okay.
No, I would have never, that wasn't me. How it came along was I obviously before that I knew that there was Indians in wrestling. So I figured it was okay when I decided to choose to be the Native American thing. But actually it was a Saturday practice and Scotty Slade had been coming in as a guest trainer that day, and we were doing promos and everyone was really struggling because they didn't know no one had given them a character. We weren't thinking about that at the time. So he basically said, pick any small aspect and cut a promo on that. And well, I was sitting there thinking and I'm panicking. I'm like, oh, what's interesting? And I knew I didn't want to cut a promo like, oh, I just here to fight and I want to prove myself, blah, blah, blah. And because everyone else is going to cut that promo that day. And I'm trying to stand out to my trainers and stuff. So I said, oh, well, let's see. What am I? Okay. I'm half Polish, half part French and part Indian. Okay, so which one of that is interesting? I can't do a French accent, and I don't like, I'm not going to do the Polish thing, because, I mean, my dad's 100% Polish, and we had the Polak jokes going around, you know, remember all those? And, so he wouldn't have been too happy to find out I was making fun of it like that. So I said, well, I'll do the Indian thing, and I can try to pull on a warrior-type aspect of it, making a more ultimate warrior-esque, you know? So I cut this horrible promo as a Native American and I called myself Tomahawk. And because, oh, that's an easy Indian name to say right now. I'm not really going to look into this. It's not really, I don't think it's going to stick. Well, as a joke, it kind of went out amongst the school that I had called myself Tomahawk, and I was an Indian. So they started playfully calling me Tomahawk all the time. And I kind of forced myself into that gimmick. And I figured, hey, you know what? Best way to learn is to just try something and get comfortable with learning to work with it. So I wasn't really into it at the beginning. And then as I got more comfortable on shows doing it, I got a little bit obsessive with the gimmick, and I went all in. And, that's how Tomahawk came around.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned an Ultimate Warrior style, like, promo thing, because that was, like, the first kind of, like, thought I got from it. I was like, oh, this is like a crazy mix between like Warrior and a Native American gimmick that's not, like, different than others.
I didn't want to do the, I did get the headdress and stuff, but I knew that I couldn't beat Tatanka at being the Indian. I thought Tatanka was the best Indian other than Wahoo McDaniel, but he never actually like hammed up the Indian in him. He just came out with the headdress and he'd kick your ass. But then he didn't do the dancing and the stuff, and I tried doing the dancing and stuff, but I didn't want to be Tatanka. So I was like, well, what's another warrior aspect? And I'm like, the Ultimate Warrior, and he does the face paint and the stuff, and he has the tassels, and that's kind of Native sort of thing. So I took like his color palette, and I put it in my repertoire instead of doing the earthy tones and stuff like that. And I made mine like a superhero Indian, I guess you could say. that was Tomahawk.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's great to hear that you actually have a Native background, because I think that's one of the biggest jokes in pro wrestling is that, you know, guys like, Chief J. Strongbow was actually an Italian dude. Billy White Wolf was, you know, Adnan Al-KC, an Iraqi dude. So it feels like whenever it was anyone who was kind of darker skinned and they could play it off, like, oh, shit, yeah, we'll make him an Indian, because why not?
Oh, see, I was the opposite. I have to fake tan. Because of my strong Polish blood. I mean, if I'm out in the sun, it takes me one or two times I can get dark. But, you know, half the time I don't have access. Because of my shoot job and stuff taking up so much time in my life, I don't have time. I don't like the idea of sitting in a booth trying to tan at a gym, because I just want to go in there, work out, and leave. And so I would fake tan. And sometimes my fake tan wouldn't come out good, and people would – They narked on me because I looked white. And that's not really fair, because there are paler Indians and stuff. But I'm not going to get into that kind of politics stuff. But yeah, so I had the opposite. It wasn't that I was dark and I fit the Indian role. It was because I was too light and everyone thought I was faking it. And it's like, no, I'm not. I wouldn't be that. I'm not that fucking – I'm not that big of an asshole to fake being something like that, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, and we're also, I feel like, far enough away from like certain aspects of the business where you don't have to like fake being that, or, you know, someone fake being Russian or shit like that.
Yeah, right. You still see it now and then, but we're past that point. So
now
I tried to be a genuine Indian. I was reading poems and stuff for promos and like reading about culture and stuff like that. I went into a deep dive, man. It was crazy.
And I mean, to be fair, you're also close enough to the Wampanoag where you could still learn stuff and it'd be easy to kind of access them and their culture. So that's a positive.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if they'd like a Blackfoot, but, you know.
They probably would have never seen one in their fucking lives, because that's such a weird thing. Because that awkward side note, my dad always told me that we're like 1/32nd Blackfoot on his mom's side, and I'm like, one, I'm not even gonna look into it because it's probably not even true, and two, if it is, how the fuck did we come from like Montana to fucking Massachusetts? Like, how?
Well, they're in Canada right above us.
Oh, are they?
I wrestled when in Canada. I wrestled on a or near the Blackfoots. I met a few of them.
That actually,
hey, they didn't have a problem. They didn't have a problem with my gimmick, so I thought I was okay.
Okay, that maybe makes it more plausible then. I always just thought, since we're, well, that would make sense if you're more on that side, because I know you've wrestled like Nova Scotia and shit. Because if you go straight up, it's mostly just Mohawks in, I think, southern Quebec. I don't fucking know. This is going off track.
I don't know. I don't, that part's beyond me now, man. That was 6.5 years of Tomahawk that I just kind of actually forgot happened. When I switched over to Rip, I kind of just left all that behind me. I have all the gear and stuff so I can look at it, and it's in a little box of sadness and tears. And if I'm feeling really down or I want a reason to drink, I'll open up the box and I'll look at, oh, this is 6.5 years where I forced myself to try to make this gimmick work, and I should have just listened to people, you know, and switched it up then. But yeah, so
well, you
that's where Tomahawk is with me. I don't hate him. He taught me how to work, but other than that, I'm not very political with him.
You got some sweet Vader-like masks out of it, though. That's kind of cool.
I made those masks, man.
You did?
Yeah, I made those. Two of them I made. One of them I sent out to a mask maker. He made it. I ended up modifying it for me because I didn't really like how it fit and stuff. But yeah, I made those.
That makes it even fucking cooler now.
To my face and cut the pieces and paint on it and... Yeah, I did that.
Wow, you should be proud of yourself.
I'm super proud of them, but what do you call it? Yeah, it's time to look at it. Waste of time. All of it's a big waste of time because now I'm doing this, and I'm doing Rip Bison now, and this is the easiest my gimmick's ever been, and I fucking love it, and it's me, and yeah, man. So, like, I look at that stuff, and I'm proud of what I was able to pull out with Tomahawk, but now it's just so much better.
All right, so now we'll move on to the last Tomahawk-related question.
Oh, boy.
Where did the idea to form Mutually Assured Destruction come from? Because, you know, in doing my research, I watched the WrestleFest from NCW for the end of 2018. And, you know, Perry comes out, and he's got this whole different gimmick, and it's explained how you guys don't get along, you don't fucking like each other, and then next thing I know, you're a tag team.
Well, our name is Mutually Assured Destruction, which is when two nations have nuclear power, but they don't want to blow each other up because they know they're going to get blown up in the process. So they kind of have this, this understanding that we can kind of coexist because we know that we both are going to end up killing each other in the end. So Perry and I had, when Perry came back from California, the beginning of 2000, he's going to hate me, but what about beginning of 2018 or end of 2017? He had been doing that Million Dollar Man type gimmick over there for how his whole career has been that, I think. And other than maybe in the very beginning, he had some different incarnations of it, but eventually he's been doing that or doing the rich guy gimmick for the longest time. And he came back, and when he came back, he was really fired up to go and try to get a foothold in New England and like around these areas because, I mean, he wrestled all over California and stuff like that. And so he wanted, when he came over here, he knew nobody anymore. And so he wanted to, he knew a couple guys to get into one show, but then he was trying to dig around and find people who ride with him out here to all these other places. And obviously me being desperate to work everywhere and anywhere possible, I hopped in the car with him. And we became friends that way. And so as riding buddies, we had always been, but Tomahawk and Perry as characters always feuded with each other. Every show we were on, because we were in the same car, they just said, they have those two wrestle. So it seemed like every damn show we were wrestling each other for a year and a half. And so we finally said one day, you know what? What if we just kind of, everyone in New England kind of knows that we're kind of friends and kind of wrestle every time, wrestle each other so many times. Let's just become a tag team so we don't have to wrestle each other anymore. And that's where that came from. And so Tomahawk and Perry became mad. And that was what our the psychology behind our team was, our story was, that we were two enemies that kind of begrudgingly became allies and work together. And we were going to go this route where we'd always end up like hurting each other or something like that. Or our matches were very chaotic because we didn't really like each other, but we liked each other. We didn't want to lose the match after we hated the other guy and stuff. And we had this whole idea, and then it just ended up, we ended up having a change in style or an eye opening experience that we just realized, you know what, let's try something different. And we just kept the name because it's cool.
It is a cool name. I will definitely give you that.
The acronym MAD is cool.
It is. It's that, I thought that was what it was going for. I didn't know it was like a nuclear thing too. And that even
literally is fucking awesome. In a Megadeth song, Sweating Bullets, Mutually Assured Destruction, and it's like, oh yeah, I could hear Dave Mustaine saying her name, and it's awesome, you know.
So, what time during, you know, this tag team with Perry, did you think it was, like, time for a change? Because I remember, like, watching the shows, and it was the show in NCW after you won the titles from Little Giants, and I think it's at the, some point, like, the middle of the match, or maybe it's the end, you pull the mask off, and I'm like, I wonder if this is, like, laying seeds for the switch, and, you know, it was...
I had started pulling the mask in matches later on in Tomahawk's tenor towards the end there because I thought it was a cool emotional thing. Not a lot of mask wrestlers did it. I wanted to show frustration in the end of the match there when it starts getting real nitty gritty. And I figured if I hit like a big move and they kicked out, I could come up and show that emotion by getting pissed. And I take off my mask and it's like, fuck this. I don't care about the image anymore. I want to win. That's what I was trying to do with that. Thing. Also, the mask was sometimes uncomfortable to fucking wear, so getting it off as soon as I could was.
Okay, so then that's just me reading too much into it and thinking of, like, you know, I feel like we all can look at that moment where Misawa tells Kawada, take the fucking mask off, and that's what I was looking at it as.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't anything like that. It was me trying to get the emotion. Me being frustrated or powering up and saying I don't need this mask to win this match, you know.
That makes more sense now.
I don't need to hide behind this to win and stuff. Because I did it in Texas and stuff too against the Luchador in the middle of the match. We were doing a tit for tat style match and in the fucking right in the middle, I took off the mask and everyone was like, "Whoa, why did he take off his mask?" And I guess it didn't come off the way I wanted to. It worked up here with taking off the mask. The people got a little fired up by it, but I guess down there they didn't fucking care.
That or they just weren't familiar enough with you to understand, like, what's behind it.
Yeah, I got, yeah, that too. Yeah, who knows? Yeah, now they're not too familiar with Tomahawk. That guy retired.
Now,
yeah, actually, to take off the mask is, the story is actually pretty, it's not that dramatic. I was going through a tough time personally with wrestling at the moment. I was very frustrated because I was having, I thought, some of the best matches as Tomahawk. I was having some really fucking good matches and stuff, and I was doing all this stuff, and I changed my gear, and I finally liked what I looked like and stuff. My body, I thought I was in the best shape of my life. I really wasn't. Now I'm in the best shape of my life. So I was like, man, what am I doing wrong? And I was just beating myself up, and there was a show. We had the last MAD show at NCW at a kids festival there. And then we had like a 2-month break. And I just started because we had 2 months off, I just didn't shave my face. You know, I started growing a beard and stuff, and I just shut off wrestling. And then I had this idea, and I was kicking around changing my gimmick for about a year at that point. And I said, man, okay, let's think of a name for this. And I was pitching it off of Perry and Johnny Torres, ideas and stuff. And where can I go? Cause I wanted to do basically what I was doing at the time. I was Rip dressed as Tomahawk at the time. And, anyway, so 2 months go by and we have a tag booking up at Let's Wrestle for Randy Carver. And I just messaged him a week before and I said, hey, Randy, I have this idea. I know I'm not, MAD wasn't established up there yet, so we could do it. And I said, announce me for this Gauntlet match as Rip Bison. It's Perry Von Vicious and Rip Bison and MAD, or Iron Rip Bison is what I went with. And so he was like, he was down with it. He was down with the name change and stuff. He said, fuck it, let's try it. What do we got to lose, you know? And the rest is history. You know, he let me try something on a show, and I was super comfortable with it. I had my taping match as him after that, and that's where it was signed, sealed, delivered. Here we go. Run with that.
Yeah, and
yeah, it wasn't really. It was depression that brought Rip Bison along.
Oh, I mean, I can kind of understand, because if it's something like you were saying, you'd put so much time at this point, 6.5 years into this gimmick, you know, just wanting it to work and wanting people to receive it, and if it's not going the way you want it to, then it's either time for a change or it's time for something at that point.
Yeah, and I was so confident. I was so. All my eggs were in one basket with Tomahawk. I was so everyone was there. Has been people for years been telling me you should drop the Indian gimmick when you're going to do something different. And I was so sold on my ability to. I guess it could have been taken as cockiness or something. I was sold that I could get Tomahawk over. I just needed the right formula, style of was there. I just need to fine tune it, and I would have gotten him over. And then I just couldn't see me getting him over. I mean, I was getting over on fair shows and stuff with him, but I wanted more. I wanted to go to the next level, and Tomahawk wasn't going to take me there. You know?
Yeah, I get, and it's crazy that Rip Bison did it in like a short period of time.
Oh, I think it because I was match wise. I was wrestling like Rip Bison already. I was just called myself Tomahawk, and I was doing the gimmick. And so as soon as the thing came off, all of a sudden that whole Indian shroud that promoters may or may not look at as good or it's hokey and stuff, that was gone. And now they could focus on my wrestling, which I thought was there. And so it made it easier that way for them to book me because now they could book me as what Rip Bison is, a lunatic. You know, they finally had something they could work with.
Yeah, and side question, when are we getting Rip'em shirts?
Rip'em shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been kicking around, so well, when wrestling finally starts up, I'm going to probably do a new design of shirts, probably reorder the last ones I had because those did really well, and then I'll make another shirt and stuff. But I'm taking suggestions for Rip Bison shirts because I have a lot of people are throwing me ideas and stuff. And I just got to decide. We can do a Rip'em shirt, or that can end up on the back of a shirt, or you know, something like that.
All right, you got, and just try not to do it in the same color as the no holds barred Hogan ones, so you don't get in trouble.
Oh,
but
God, no. I already got that when I first became Rip Bison. A couple of guys on shows I don't work for anymore were trying to make that joke to me, and I was just like, dude, whatever. I like Rip as a name. I actually took Rip because it sounded like the old school '80s name you would find. Like there was a Rip. Oh man, what's his name? I don't even follow him anymore. Don't tell him. Oh, man. Anyways.
Rip Rogers?
Yeah, it was an old school name from the 80s. Rip Rogers.
Yep.
Yeah. And what you call him? Yeah, don't tell him. He's probably, I don't know if he listens to this.
Oh, I don't think he listens.
Or something.
We're too fucking outlaw mud show carny shit for him.
Yeah, right. He's going to be that Rip Bison's outlaw mud show guy. What you call him? Yeah, no, so I like the name because I was going for that Dr. Death Bruiser Brody look, and I wanted to come off as that, and I feel like having a name that wasn't like Rip Bison. And Bison is actually not a play. A lot of people say, oh, you're saying Bison because of Tomahawk. No, it wasn't. I liked the last name Tyson, like because I was doing Iron Rip Bison. I like Iron Mike Tyson. So I just put a B in front instead of a T. And then all that, 2 days later, I realized, oh, shit, it was an Indian. That could be a little homage to that, you know, that, as much as you can read into it.
I just thought it was cool because bison are one of my favorite animals. I fucking love them. They are gigantic death machines. But
they taste delicious. Yeah.
And
they taste great.
And the moment I saw it, you know, Rip Bison, I was like, it's the same thing I saw. I thought when I saw Gnarls Garvin, I'm like, holy fuck, this is like an 80s All Japan Gaijin dude, and I love every fucking thing about it.
Yep, that's what Rip Bison is. If you could take me out and throw me in the 80s, I'd fit right in.
Yeah, I could easily.
I'm not as big as them though; they're big.
But I mean, it's one of those
things
where I can.
I'm swinging that damn 10-foot strap around my head, and no one can get close to me, so I look big. They stand next to me though; I'm Chris Benoit.
But I mean, it's one of those things where I easily could see you as you know, throwing in the 80s. I could see you teaming with Stan Hansen against Tenryu and Ashura Hara, and I'd believe it. There's no way I wouldn't believe it.
Oh my God, they'd tear me apart. It'd be awesome. It'd be so cool. Oh man, my dream right now is to find Grumpy Grandpa Tenaru, and I want him to teach me how to punch people in the jaw like he does now. There's that level that Japanese guys, when they get old and they put on those baggy pants, you know, they get rid of the trunks or the tights, and they put, Kawada did it too. They put on the baggy pants and they just don't give two fucks anymore. And they're going to hit one of their big moves. Misawa, it was the Tiger Driver, or you got forearmed. That was the two moves you got hit with at the end there. When you become a murder great grandpa, a grumpy great grandpa in wrestling, or a grandpa in wrestling, man, you got to just learn how to punch somebody in the jaw and drop them on their head. And that's what that is my goal right now. Oh, I got to survive long enough so I can get those baggy pants.
And I'm guilty of that too, man, because, you know, when I was wrestling, I loved Tenor so much, and I would throw dudes in the fucking corner, and I'm doing the chop punch combo, and I'm too young to not give a fuck, but I'm not giving a fuck. I'm fucking leveling dudes in the fucking jocks. I'm like, fuck yeah, if Tenru can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, right, and then you realize you're an asshole.
Yep.
And these guys don't want to get beat up anymore.
And now I think I follow him on Instagram, and he looks happy all the time. And I'm like, I don't fucking like this. I remember you being old and miserable and mean as shit, and I don't want to see you smiling.
Oh, I think that will, as soon as he gets to a wrestling show, he just gets miserable. I can see that. I mean, I see indie wrestlers who, some of them get to wrestling shows and they just get miserable, you know? So, I mean, I feel like wrestling can do that to a guy. I know firsthand it does. I'm sure you do too, being on shows. You've seen the fucking grizzled guys. Just Japanese grizzled guys are the coolest because they just fucking, they're angry. And they get punched in the mouth and they just look at you.
Yes.
And that's the scariest part. They look at you with no emotion, like they're dead inside. And I'm like, oh, here it comes.
Oh, I just love Japanese wrestling so fucking much. It saved my life.
Fantastic.
No. I don't know why it's taking me so long to come back to this, but when was the moment where you...
It's the pants. You're thinking about murder grandpa pants, and you're like, fuck yeah, I want a pair of those.
That's immediately what I'm thinking now. It's like, you know what? I'm at the point where my knee is probably just as bad as Muda's, so if I can just fucking get those pants and punch people, I'm doing it.
Those pants that hide the braces, you know? That's why Undertaker, when he came back, he's wearing the leather pants again like Biker Taker, because he has all those knee braces on underneath it, you know?
Need something so to fucking hold him up.
The baggy pants, because how many damn braces he probably has. Those, 5 or 6 on each leg.
Oh, God, they're fucking... I don't know how he's still doing this at this point, because he can. He can barely fucking move, but he's still fucking wrestling, and I don't get it.
God bless his heart. God bless him.
Now, was there a moment where you felt like you had settled in as Rip Bison? And was it the match against Warhorse?
Nope. It was 2 weeks before... 2 weeks before that at Let's Wrestle, Randy let me wrestle. The timeline was Kobe Christ, then Warhorse. And the Kobe Christ match was... I took it as a tryout. I had been doing really well as Rip Bison at their tapings. And then finally, Randy decided he was going to book me in a singles match on one of his actual shows. And on Let's Wrestle, and give me that spotlight. And he put me with Kobe, and I absolutely love Kobe. He's one of my favorite people in the world. And it was kind of like a tryout, I felt. I don't know if Randy intended it to be a tryout, but he put the stars aligned, and I got my wish to wrestle one of my really good friends who's really at my mindset on wrestling and stuff. And we were like, okay, let's take this as a tryout, man. This is our chance. And we went out there and we did exactly what we were told. And I guess we set a mood with that match. And like everybody came out from the locker room to watch that match, which was a first for me. No one had ever, I mean, I'd have a few guys come up, but I guess that was locker room. Everyone came up. They wanted to see that fucking match. And we delivered. And so then on the podcast the next week, actually in the like 2 days later, Randy goes, are you available on this Limitless date? That was 2 weeks later. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I am. I'll be at Limitless. Fuck yeah, I'll drop everything and get there. I want to be on the big show. give me that. And so then I listen to the podcast because maybe he's going to announce what I'm doing. And that's when he announces that, or he mentioned something about Warhorse. He said, I'm thinking about that. And I'm like, oh, fuck. That's a big, Warhorse is a big independent name right now. That's huge from what I was doing. You know, for 8 years, I didn't get to wrestle. I mean, I wrestled with Tommy Dreamer once, but I mean, that's different than like being with a relevant, okay, relevant's a bad word.
Topical.
A topical, yeah. a social media darling type status wrestler who's like part of the, everyone's been putting him on the Mount Rushmore of indie wrestlers at the moment, you know? And so I was like, fuck, that's a big jump, and I was kind of freaking out. And then I listened to the podcast, and Randy basically announced it. And the way Randy said it was, he didn't finalize that card because he knew he had a couple matches at Let's that week, that if they went the way he wanted, he was going to bring some guys in. And I was one of those guys. I was very lucky to have stolen the show at Let's with that match with Covey. And then, oh, I also had two more great matches at the tapings. So I went 3-for-3 in front of Randy one weekend. And I think that gave him confidence in me. And he said, okay, I can put him on the show in 2 weeks. He's ready. And so then I was fucking – so that's the moment that I was like, fuck yeah, this is the groove Rip Bison's going to be in. And then when I got to the show with Warhorse, I was shitting my pants again because I was like, fuck, I don't think I'm ready for this. This is the biggest show. This is a really big show I've been on. Or the first – one of the few first big ones I've ever been on. Like, that's a lot of people sitting out there. And it's a guy I've never met, and he has this – he has an aura about him because, I mean, you watch him on social media killing it and stuff. So I was fucking nervous about that. And, like, I'm a nobody. You know, I was a nobody. And so that was crazy. And then I kind of doubted myself. And then when Warhorse and I sat down and talked about the match, everything came back and I was confident again. And I think we fucking killed it from what people say.
Yeah. Oh, dude, you totally did. Like, Lily, going into that, I had no idea who you were. I was like, okay, but I mean, it's a Warhorse match, so I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to skip it because he's a dude I really enjoy. And then as it's going on, I'm like, holy fuck, who is Rip Bison and why haven't I seen him before? Because like I said, to me, it just clicked. I'm like, this is, you know, 80s All Japan Gaijin. This dude's the fucking man. He's fucking swinging shit around. I think he's about to kill Warhorse. Like, I knew that the chances were...
I'm glad that came off. I was hoping that it could come off that I could possibly hurt him.
Yeah, because that was the thing. It was one of those things where I was like, I mean, in my mind, it's like, no, there's no way that Warhorse would drop the title here. But then I'm thinking, wait, why wouldn't this be the perfect time? A dude you've never heard before, first show on, if you want to fucking make people turn their heads and pay attention to shit, why wouldn't this be the moment? And this dude is fucking him up, so this is possible now.
Luckily, unfortunately for me, IWTV had no clue who I was before that match, so it was not in the cards for me winning. I was, what's it called? That's what, yeah, they had no clue who I was. I was legitimately the most nobody on that card. I was this random dude, and they were throwing, and I was given the opportunity, and I guess I hit it out of the fucking park. Because everybody I keep getting messages once in a while. They see that they saw that match and they thought it was amazing, which is crazy. It was a 6-minute match.
I know, and that was my favorite thing. It was just one of those that was just such a fucking awesome train wreck from beginning to end that it sticks with you.
Oh, that's all my matches, man. I want to have train wrecks. There's nothing pretty with Rip Bison. I did amateur wrestling for 8 years before I started pro wrestling. I'm done with pretty, man. I'm done with pretty. Let me punch and kick and throw things.
No more barrel rolls and roll-ups. It's fucking...
Yeah, right? Hey, if somebody... I know Covey and I tried to do that a couple times. Not in the match that we had at Let's, but we have tried doing that. We're like, one of these days we're going to have a match where we're going to get nitty-gritty with the technical stuff and everything like that. But, you know, that hasn't come yet. I'm too busy throwing people. I've made that my thing. It doesn't matter how big you are, I'm gonna throw you.
And that's the best fucking way to look at it. Now Anchor's weird. It throws me. It kicks you off after an hour, which we're getting close to. So I'm just gonna stop it and then start it again, so we don't miss anything. Sound good?
Okie dokie.
All right. All right, and we're back, and that's a pretty seamless transition if anyone listens back. I don't know why, but I always fucking talk about it. Now.
Oh, sweet. He transitioned perfect. I saw it. I'm sitting in the basement with him.
Now, how did the opportunity to be on Pandemic at the Dojo happen? Did Randy reach out to you?
Randy, there's a big locker room group page and stuff. And basically, anyone who wants to show up, I know it might be uncomfortable for people because of like the uncertainty of the pandemic, but I just knew my personal life was lined up perfect for it, and my job wasn't really affected by it, so it was business as usual for me. I took the opportunity, you know, and it just threw my name in the hat.
And, I mean, how fucking great did that work out for you?
I found out that, Randy asked me, like a couple days before, he was like, who do you want to work? And oh, by the way, the Sunday show, or the Sunday taping, cause it was a 2-day taping. He goes, AG wants to have a match with you. And I'm like, oh, that's fine. I'll wrestle AG. I didn't wrestle AG in 4 years at the time. And, so it worked out for me. And then, I guess Randy wanted, That was because I was there 2 days. That's how I got more matches than maybe D.L. Hurst or the other guys that I wrestled. They were only there for 1 day, so they had less matches than me. So it only made sense that at the end I was there. I was being seen one of the most. So yeah, fuck it, put it in the championship match, you know. Which I didn't know it was gonna be a championship match. I thought I was just gonna have a fucking match, you know. But then we started telling the story and about. We had the 3 matches, so I won 2, and I earned my opportunity for it, and that's how that went around.
Yeah, and because I was wondering how it was, like, brought up that, okay, you're going to be a main focus of this series, because you were, whether, you know, you think you were or not. It really did set the story of you, you know, beating these guys and lining yourself up to go against AG, and I loved the promo where, you know, you said how he said you were nothing more than a name change. And I thought that one really fucking hit home because it sold it of you never know what can happen.
Yeah, I mean, also it goes to show, like, even AG, I don't know if he admits it, but I was there when he was throwing gimmicks every 2 months. He was changing his gimmick up because he was trying to find it. And he finally got AG, and that's when it took off. And then in his promo, he basically he said, gear change and name change about me. It doesn't mean I can beat him in a match for the world championship. So I'm like, you know what? Well, let's make this a little bit personal. I'll talk about, yeah, he's calling me a gear change and a name change. Well, listen, motherfucker. You were a gear name in a my girlfriend made your gear. I know what your gear changed, you know? So, and I know your name changed too. You went from all good Anthony Green to retro Anthony Green. So, you know, that's how that promo came on. And also, I just so happened to have Macho Man glasses in my house, so that was perfect.
I didn't know she made gear.
Yeah, she used to make it for everybody, and the drama in gear making world, because there's a lot of prima donnas.
Oh, I can only fucking imagine.
She only makes it for certain people.
Well, then we're not going to mention who she is, even though everybody knows who we're talking about. She's not going to make you gear. Shut the fuck up.
Everyone leave her alone.
She's not making your fucking gear, Marks.
I'll find out where you are, or if you come to a show, I'll kill you. Okay? I'm scary. Rawr. I have spikes and leather. And I swing the thing, and nobody wants to talk to me at shows because I'm always grumpy.
That's the best.
I can kill you.
You have 10 real grumpiness at the fucking merch table.
Listen to this. I'm trying.
Okay, give me a second. How crazy was it to you that in only technically your 4th match in Limitless, you literally got to challenge for the belt?
Oh. I mean, it was a little part of me knew it was an honor. I was happy that Randy trusted me in having a good enough match to basically say it was a championship match, because AG chose the girls before to put it on, so it was kind of nice that they've let that become a championship match. So I appreciated that, but I go into every match as business as usual, man. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm going to give you 100% of what I got within the allotted time that I got. And this one was just, we had to look at it as a big fight feel. And that's how I try to make all my matches big fight feel, within not stealing or not taking away from the other guys on the card. But I try to get at 100% in all my matches. So like if I was comfortable, if it was like any other match, calling it or actually performing in it, other than the fact that I couldn't breathe for some reason. I don't know if the building was stuffy that day or what, but I was like in the middle of it, I was dying. It was bad. I was gassed out of my mind.
I mean, it is.
I usually pride of myself being 110 miles an hour at fucking doing matches and never getting blown up and stuff. But that day, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I slept or drank too much the night before or whatever. And I just was gassed.
And you're in a compact space. That's a fucking tiny place. So.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I just got back from it today. We did some training over up at Limitless. I helped out a couple of the young kids. Me and Johnny Torres were giving a in quotes, seminar clinic or guest coaching thing, which we'll call it. I just wanted to go up and get some ring rust off of me, and it definitely helping out those kids up there and stuff. And so, yeah, I'm used to that small little cramped building now.
At least you're giving back. That's important.
I don't know if I'm giving them back. I'm talking a lot and spewing, just rambling on and on about things that I feel, my opinions on stuff. But if they can find one little thing, maybe I helped. You know, they could say, "Oh, Rip fucking said, don't be a douchebag." Okay, yay. You know.
I feel like you are one of the dudes where the pandemic came at the absolute worst fucking time.
Oh yeah, but you know what? Yes, I agree with that 100%. I was just about. It's funny because I was talking to Johnny Torres today on the way home from the thing, and we were talking about how some guys on Twitter I'm starting to see it where it's like, oh, I'm a good hand. Remember, let me book me on the shows when because they're starting up again. Then wrestling's starting up again. Thank God. And I was talking to him about that. I'm like, you know what? It's funny because I'm so scared. I'm not going to do that. Because one thing that all the big promoters that are starting to follow me on social media, they all posted like the same day when wrestling shut down to the world. They're like, if anyone sends me a damn talent fucking resume during this time, you're all motherfuckers to me. We're going to kill you, like type of thing. And I'm like, oh, dude, I'm such a fledgling in this. In the big leagues now because of Limitless, I can't. I literally deleted my goddamn resume messages that I was about to send out to these promotions. I'm like, okay, I'm not fucking this up, you know? Yeah, so it kind of sucked. But the pandemic at the dojo tapings, I think it gave me content for at least six or however long. I think it was 6 weeks. The 6 weeks I had continuous wrestling content being put out, and it made me feel like I was still wrestling. So, like, for the past 3 weeks or 4 weeks since it last aired, now is the first time I felt like, okay, wrestling's missing, you know?
Yeah, and it was a hard thing to kind of get through this time without there really being a lot of stuff. And, I mean, yeah, you could have watched WWE with the no fans and shit, but I don't know. I wasn't really into them before, so I kind of didn't want to force myself to watch it anyway.
Oh, I just went into the depths of YouTube and found or Daily Motion, and I just watched Japanese wrestling. Or I didn't even watch wrestling, man. I haven't really been thinking about it. These 2 months not wrestling, I've really focused on like my health and like working out and getting in healthy shape. Not being in the best shape, but being healthy and feeling good and stuff. And like my body's healed up, and so I'm excited for wrestling to start up again, because I know there's a whole bunch of people who are in that boat right now who took this time to fucking maybe do some rehabilitation type exercising and like getting better and fixing some of their problems that being on the road every weekend and not having a time off. This is giving us all this healing. And think of the opportunities of all these guys coming back fucking healthy. We're going to kill it.
Oh, it's going to
fucking kill. We're going to kill wrestling like Vince did.
I'm glad you said that.
We're all going to be doing damn crazy ass. I mean, I can't do a fucking flips or a cartwheel to save my life, but I can throw myself off of a damn cage. I can go through a goddamn Barricade. Hell yeah. I've been watching Cactus Jack. Give me some of those damn bumps. Yeah, I'm ready to kill it. Whoever wants to face me, don't be afraid to throw me on my head. Die for this.
Have you ever seen any of his matches in the 91 Champions Carnival?
Cactus?
Yeah, dude, he wrestled Jumbo.
I haven't really watched a lot of Cactus other than his WCW days where he was doing stupid. He was doing the sunset flip from the top rope all the way to the floor on the outside, and it was just, for a roll up. He's landing on his head and like doing the nasty plunge and stuff like that onto the exposed concrete and cartwheeling over barricades. And that's what I've been watching. I'm like, give me those bumps, Cactus.
I
haven't really checked out much of his Japanese stuff other than obviously the deathmatch stuff, because that's awesome.
I will find it. I'll find and send you a link. He had a match with Jumbo in like 91, and he wrestled Kawada and Hustle in the mid 2000s.
I watched the Hustle match.
Okay.
I love that match. Kawada didn't want anything to do with it.
No.
He was supposed to wrestle Goldberg or something.
Some shit like that.
And so they replaced him with Cactus, and Kawada was pissed. Oh, he's always pissed. Not now. He owns a restaurant. He seems very happy. But back then, when Kawada was wrestling, he was fucking pissed.
Oh, no. He was so fucking angry.
And I loved it, because I loved that Cactus fucking, he got all his shtick in. The Socko came out. And everything, and I was like, yeah, this is awesome, especially against Kawada. I was like, yeah, fuck you, Kawada. Here's a carny guy. Let's do this, you know? This is awesome. But, yeah, man, I got to check out some younger. Okay, I mean, I've watched him in ECW, but I never really went into his normal stuff.
Right. Japan, you
know, or as normal as he can be.
Yeah. Yeah, and
because I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anything normal about him.
No, it doesn't seem to be, at least.
No.
And I love, you mentioned Kawada's restaurant. Someone put a picture above it the other day. The restaurant's been open 10 years, and Kobashi just went for the first time.
I hope he didn't order anything. I hope he just went there and like walked in and shook Kawada's hand. He's like, oh, this place is nice, and he fucking left. That would have been hilarious. What a rib. That would have been so good.
Oh. I wonder if Tawei just hangs out there all the time.
Fuck Tao. Tawei. I've been watching a lot of Johnny. This whole weekend with Johnny Torres, been doing nothing but watching the fucking tag leagues from like 89 to like 93. There's a big playlist on YouTube. It's one right after the other. They do the highlights and stuff. And every Tawei match, he's just the one taking the moves, and Jumbo gets the hot tag. And then Jumbo kicks the shit out of Misawa and Kawada for like an hour and a half, it seems like his comeback is. And then they finally lose because Tawei takes a powerbomb. And so that's how I always think of Tawei. He's the funny guy.
I love him. I don't know why. I think it's maybe because he is the least athletic of the four. But I don't know. Just that dude put everything in.
I personally think he's the least interesting. I mean, he does the Scott Hall choke slam, baby.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and he does big boot the shit out of people, but other than that, he's got those two moves of doom. And I think he's better in tag matches than singles, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'll watch, especially when he's with Jumbo. Jumbo has him in there taking God knows however much everything, and then Jumbo tags in, pulls up the elbow sleeve, and he's running around the ring like a maniac, and I'm like, Jumbo! You're crazy, man! This weekend gave me a new appreciation for Jumbo.
I get heat for this, but I personally believe Jumbo was the best wrestler of the 80s. Like, better than Flair, better than Hogan. Jumbo's the fucking man.
He didn't make as much money as the other two, I don't think.
No, he did not, but...
So, I think if you're doing... You have to look at it best as in with... Best technically, best with the fans, or best money-drawing abilities. And I think there's three different ones. I think he could be the best wrestler in the 80s. I have no opinion of that. I have I can't do a top 10. I do believe, actually, no, I lied. I do have a number one, and the number one is Kenta Kobashi. He's the best wrestler ever, and you can't tell me any other why. He can do fucking everything.
Yeah,
and there's nothing he can't do. He can cheese it up. He can got. Oh man, I think he's the best wrestler on the face of the earth, and no one could. Every argument could be easily, or not easily, but definitely talked into, yeah, he's the best wrestler. You can turn anybody into thinking that. So he's my number one, and then there's no other, everyone else is just there, you know?
To me, Misawa, Kobashi, and Kawada are the top three to probably ever do it. Kawada is my personal favorite, but it's one of those things where I can understand, yeah, he's just my personal favorite. It doesn't mean he was the best of the three. He's just the dude I liked the most.
Yeah, right. That's what Kobashi is with me. He's my absolute favorite. He had so many. He changed his gimmick while not changing it and stuff, you know, his style and everything. And it was, oh, man, he's just so good. I wish I could have a quarter or an eighth or a 16th of the natural talent that dude had for not even being a wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, he joined the school and he didn't have wrestling experience and he fucking worked his ass off and he got to be the best wrestler in the world. You know, that's crazy.
It is.
Give me some of that. Right. I don't know what he put in his rice, but I want some.
Baba also, knew.
Kicked out of cancer.
Yeah, he did.
If you can kick out of cancer and come back and have a 5-year title reign. Okay, that's the best wrestler in the world. Kicked out at one.
I don't know if Liger had cancer, but he definitely had the brain tumor, and he fucked that up. So he's the only other one that's close to.
Okay, Liger's up there. We have Liger and Kobashi. I want to see that. Let's do that. You think they'll do it now?
No, man. They're both retired.
How much money do you think we get? We got. Do you think they'll take 40 and a hot dog?
I don't even.
Okay, all right. Maybe I'm being cheap. I'll give them 60. 60 and a hot dog. And maybe I'll throw in for their hotel.
I wonder if they've ever been paid in hot dogs in their life. Liger, maybe. I don't know about Kobashi.
I don't know. I don't know. What'd you call it? Probably not. Maybe when he came over for ROH.
Can you imagine?
I don't know. Maybe a house show at ROH. I don't know if he did more shows than just that one with Samoa Joe with him.
He did two. He did the one with Joe, and then he did the... I think it was the next night he did a tag one where...
Okay, so the tag booking was the hot dogs.
That was hot dog night.
It had to have been the hot dogs. He got all the money on the next day and they were like... And somebody was like, okay, we only got hot dogs. Sorry, buddy.
You and Homicide can share this pack of ballparks.
Yeah. We'll apply the ketchup. No mustard. That's expensive.
All right, the last wrestling-related question I have is, what are the goals once the pandemic is all gone?
The goals are you're going to hopefully see Rip Bison popping up all over the fucking place, and everyone's getting it real sick of seeing me.
All right,
that's my goals. That's the short-term goals, you know? I'm going to fucking shove myself down some people's throats.
Well, I hope you make it out my way.
That's what you're supposed to do, right? I never did that once. I thought you were supposed to work hard and be quiet and mind your P's and Q's and do your job. No, shove your dad. Everyone's going to see Rip Bison. Whether or not I'm throwing chairs across the thing, strapping somebody. And if you have any helpers by the ring, they're definitely going to get beat up by me.
I honestly hope.
They're in the war path, baby. I'm coming by that ring. I'm going to whip you. And if you get too close, I might body slam you. I don't know. You might catch a lariat. That's my goals now.
Beat up young boys.
Yeah, beat up young. I want to be Suzuki.
I hope more than anything you make it out my way. That would be fucking fantastic. And I usually finish off the show with ridiculous questions that have nothing to do with wrestling. Are you down for some of those?
Oh, fuck yeah.
All right. The first one's a standard one. I've asked it to pretty much everybody. Grape or strawberry jelly?
Jelly is what comes out of bugs when you crush them, so neither.
Wow, not a jelly guy, huh?
Jello, if it's jello with an alcoholic substitute from the water, then yeah, okay, I'll do that.
Okay. least favorite Disney character?
Anyone from Frozen.
Wow. Some Frozen hate there.
Fuck those movies. I'll fight anyone. And I know there's a lot of Disney nerds in wrestling. You know where I am. Find me. I'll fight you out in the parking lot. I'll win.
Oh, no, that's great. I love that. What is the one animal people keep as pets that you think is just fucking stupid?
The dogs that are smaller than my cats.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of tiny dogs either. Don't know what it is, but
yeah, I love dogs, but if like even a pug, even like a big pug, that's too small. That's useless. That thing, I'm gonna kick it.
I
can't hunt mice.
Oh,
I had a cat that was 25 pounds.
Oh man,
of like muscle. He wasn't fat. He was just a big fucking cat. And so, yeah, if your dog couldn't kick the shit out of my cat, it's not. That's a useless animal.
All right, I'll just go to the last one, the standard bearer of the show. What is the creepiest basement you've ever been in, and why?
Oh my god. Oh, a basement. Oh, yeah. And now, because now I'm thinking about all the venues I've been in that the locker rooms have been in the basement.
Oh, and I hear that a lot, that locker room basements are creepy.
Oh, yeah, they're horrible. I have changed in some of the worst basements ever. The basement freezer that I was once a fucking locker room, it had a bunch of food in there that was definitely out of date.
Oh,
and it kind of smelt funky, and it was kind of cold, but also like mildewy.
Ooh.
And I think people were still using it. And there was there was one corner that had like weird apparatuses hanging from the ceiling, man. So yeah, like we're changing in this death chamber or a sex chamber. I don't know.
It was a death sex chamber.
Oh, a sexy death chamber.
All right, man.
Man, that's the worst basement I've ever been in. Everything else has been great.
All right, man, that is all I got. Thank you again so much for doing this. I'm super appreciative that you even said yes, and to know that this was your first podcast, it makes me even happier.
Hey, man, no problem. Anytime if you want me on to spill bullshit, I got tons of it.
I appreciate it, man.
Actually kind of sad. I could fill up a whole bunch of episodes. Well, but yeah, no, thank you, man. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I don't know if Delmi told you, but I was even nervous, like even thinking about asking you. So I'm so glad you did.
Why?
I don't know. I was like,
that's my question for you. Why?
I don't know.
I'm just a nobody, man.
It was just one of those things where I was like, man, Rip Bryson's going to just not even fucking answer me. I'm not going to be left on red. I'm just going to be left on the inbox.
Oh, actually, yeah, you were lucky that she Iggy'd me that she wanted me on, because honestly, she's like, oh, I'm on a podcast, and no offense to you, I don't listen to anything that people send me.
Yeah, and I don't.
So she's like, oh, I was on this podcast and I talked about you and Perry, and I'm like, cool, I don't care because I'm a jerk. And then she's like, oh, well, he might be hitting you up. And then I was like, okay, so I'll be looking for a hit up for a podcast. We'll see what that is, you know?
Well, I'm glad you did it, man. I appreciate it.
This was fun.
Thank you. I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, I had fun. This is fun and exciting.
I do have something that I'm planning on. I will message you right after this to see if you're interested.
All right, awesome.
All right, man. I will talk to you soon, and you take care and stay safe.
Yeah, I'll try. No promises.
All right, man.
Yeah, see you, man.
Bye. All right, everybody. That was Rip Bryson, and that was way crazier and funnier than I ever thought that would have been, and I loved every fucking moment of it. Great dude. You can find a lot of his stuff. Especially the Rip Bryson stuff. I think Limitless has uploaded it all on their YouTube. If not, IWTV, use the promo code Limitless, 5 free days. NCW, Northeast Championship Wrestling, is a place he's done a lot of stuff. They have their own streaming service. It's $5 a month. I mean, there's a lot worse you could do with $5 a month. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people in questionable habits who may or may not listen to this podcast. The last thing I want to talk about is actually, I guess, more of a downer. So, a buddy of mine, this is kind of hard to even say, he was involved in a hit and run last night. For people around here who wrestled or yarded with WZW, affectionately refer to this man as, you know, the Puck Stuffer. Paulie Puck Stuffer was his name. Jermaine is his real name, but I haven't been given much more updates besides, I know it was an airlift. Damian Slade, who's been on the show before, that's his brother, and they did start a GoFundMe for some medical bills, because I can only imagine what this is going to cost. I'm going to give a link to it. I'm going to donate. I hope as many of you locally who know me or just know the show can reach out and do some help, because, you know, he's definitely going to need it. And that's all I got for that. Shit, yeah, that was more of a downer than I anticipated. So just going to leave it on that. I don't care about my social medias right now. What I care about you doing is donating to that GoFundMe and helping him and his family out, because that's more important than wrestling. So love all you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.